Blog Talk Radio.
And welcome to Circle Sanctuary Network Podcasts, brought to you by Circle Sanctuary, one of the oldest nature spirituality churches in the United States, connecting people of nature-centered paths around the world. Join us through the week for a variety of shows discussing various topics, celebrating the divine in all of its forms through nature worship, rituals, education, and building bridges of community.
Good evening, and welcome to Circle Sanctuary's Circle Talk with Minister Deborah Rose. On tonight's episode, which is an encore presentation from August 20th, 2019, Deborah talks with Reverend Charlotte Baer on creating bedside spells. And in the discussion with using pagan healing modalities to gather story, find central metaphor, create sigils, and build hermetic energy and develop chants that create personalized ritual for persons who are bedbound or shut in at home.
Welcome to our show. My name is Deborah Rose, and I'm your host on Circle Talk. Circle Talk will now be one of the shows featured on the new Circle Sanctuary Network podcast, or CSNP. The Circle Sanctuary Network podcast team have put together a lineup of rotating shows throughout the month. Mondays feature Lunatic Mondays with host Laura Gonzalez, alternating weeks in English and Spanish. It can't be Tuesday without this show, Circle Talk, and I will continue to be the host for this fun show on the first and third Tuesday of each month. Wednesdays will feature a new show, Divining Dreams with Selena Fox. Are you in the mood for some magic? Then you'll want to tune in on Thursdays for Moon Magic with Jeanette and David Ewing. It's such a fun and informative lineup of shows. I hope you try them all. Tonight on Circle Talk, we'll be featuring a presenter that I met at Pagan Spirit Gathering this year when I attended her workshop, Creating Bedside Spells. So tonight on Circle Talk, we'll be discussing using pagan healing modalities to gather story, find central metaphor, create sigils, build a hermetic energy, and develop chants that create a personalized ritual for persons who are bedbound or shut in at home. Our guest tonight is Reverend Charlotte Baer, who has been in ministry for 21 years. She is a U.S. veteran and has been in healthcare chaplaincy for over 10 years. I'm very proud to say that she's also in the Circle Sanctuary Ministry Program. In her first career, she was a broadcast journalist and an actress. We'll have to find out about that career change. Let's welcome Charlotte to the show and get started. Welcome, Charlotte. Welcome, Charlotte.
Hello.
Charlotte? Hey, how are you? It's Debbie. Welcome to Circle Talk.
Oh, thank you, Deb. These are such great programs you do. Thanks for hosting
us.
Yeah,
well, I'm very excited. Well, tell us a little bit about you, and I want you to start with backwards. I want you to start with the broadcast journalist and the actress, because I'm real curious about that, because I know you. You're very elegant and spiritual. I want to hear about the fun part first.
Oh, the fun part. Oh, okay. Well, you know, like I told you, I'm a dark moon for anyone who doesn't know me. So I'm 58 and going strong. And and so I've been working professionally for 40 years and about 20. The first career I had was in professional theater and broadcast journalism. I had an undergraduate degree, in broadcast journalism and theater.
Mm-hmm.
And I had been unionized in SAG after an equity from that age on, working in regional repertory theater, working in a little bit of television and some film.
Mm-hmm.
I was, and then industrial videos and training videos and all kinds of stuff like that. I also, within that time, did a tour of duty with the U.S. military.
Mm-hmm.
I was very interested in armed forces, radio and television network, as well as Voice of America. But I was offered an opportunity to be, apparently, the first woman TV news director who they would send into combat areas to direct and narrate, you know, stories going on in the field. So I did that for a long time and did 16 different productions for the Department of Defense as
wow.
a service person. Service woman, and then after that went and did a master's degree in communication, continuing in radio, television, and film, but also learning a lot about counseling modalities and empathetic communication.
Mm-hmm.
And I started to discover through that time that what I really, really loved about that work was not so much the television news industry, but really interviewing people and the power of story and gathering story
mm-hmm.
and helping people to feel seen and heard and understood and respected and, you know, feeling a real sacred trust when someone would really open up to me. So
mm-hmm.
I think the seeds of a love of counseling were starting there. When I was in Seattle after I came back from the service too and I had finished my first master's,
mm-hmm.
I was continuing to work freelance, broadcast journalism, work in regional repertory theater. And many of my friends who were servicemen and women, as well as people in the performing arts, were dying of AIDS. That
mm-hmm.
was really a big deal. And the Persian Gulf War, the second one, was really raging, and so I was with Veterans Against the War. And I became an HIV tester and counselor, you know, part-time, because I felt I needed to do something. And that kind of grew from there. I went on to get certified as a grief counselor, and then I started my own production company called Synergy, which was really bringing together multiple nonprofit partners around a cause and creating public television programs, public festivals, theater events that would raise awareness and raise money for those
mm-hmm.
causes. So I think Synergy kind of set the stage and became
mm-hmm.
a central metaphor for me in what has really – you know, my career, I think, has been a fulfillment of that because I continue in every job I've had since then, I continue to combine not only being a practitioner doing the direct work with people, but also
mm-hmm.
Bringing community stakeholders together who normally wouldn't play together, creating
mm-hmm.
community, finding new solutions, developing new programs, and you know, I've changed the context in which I do that, but that continues to kind of be the pattern of my work. So that was, you know, that called me into ministry. And 20 years ago,
mm-hmm.
there was no pathway into ordained ministry, community organizing, nonprofit management through ministry or chaplaincy that was pagan. There just wasn't.
Absolutely.
So there were a lot of us who were closeted. You know, I grew
mm-hmm.
up a Unitarian, was deeply involved in the Unitarian Church all my life, was very much involved with any earth-based tradition at all, shamanism,
mm-hmm.
druidry, weesh, you know. I was paying the Women of Wisdom Conference in Seattle. I had a friend who had a Dianic coven that I was with at that time. I used to, you know, literally run naked under the full moon with women on the coast.
There's nothing wrong with
drawing
that.
Drawing
down
the
fun.
Moon was a big deal.
Yeah.
You know, and it was just exciting, but there was no discussion about how do we live authentically as pagans in something like
right.
federal or healthcare chaplaincy or mm-hmm. or let alone what kind of evidence-based healing modalities do you bring to the table?
Mm-hmm.
So that was weird. And, you know, my stepdad had been a military chaplain for the 82nd Airborne. He'd joke about you'd flip the cross, you know, with the crucifix on it one side and then flip it without it on the other. But everything was Judeo-Christian.
Mm-hmm.
And as much as we might say, yeah, I mean, tip of the hat to those traditions for laying down the standards of practice.
Right.
I mean, they pioneered, you know, what chaplaincy should even look like. So the Methodist Church, you know, paid for my seminary. They basically came
mm-hmm.
in and gave me a trust merit scholarship. Boom. So I was happy to join them in the day when on the West Coast here, they're very much a very progressive, defiantly progressive branch of the Methodist Church, and I in turn wanted to give them good service back, of course. And so,
mm-hmm.
You know, I did 10 years of faith community leadership and also faith community organizing, started nonprofit coalitions and programs serving at-risk communities, domestic violence, vulnerable elders, veterans, youth at risk, that kind of stuff, kids in poverty, and was growing a lot of my counseling skills through that, all kinds of counseling modalities that, you know, as a sort of frontline responder felt I had to be equipped to deal with. But I wasn't technically a chaplain. I didn't expect to be a chaplain. I didn't go into ministry thinking I'd be a chaplain. I thought I was going to be a program developer forever, you know, and it's a calling that found me. So, which I hear from a lot of people.
Right.
After about 10 years of doing professional ministry, I was back to my Unitarian zone. You know, I was still Methodist in name and ordination, but my Christo-pagan background was leaning heavily more back into paganism. I was doing dream work.
Mm-hmm.
I was really into shamanism and doing retreats, lots of spiritual retreats. And I had been in the community organizing world in Santa Clara County, which is San Jose, and it's the 10th largest city in the country for people who don't know. It actually houses tons of veterans, and I was very much on the ground with the statewide collaborative for veterans and military families. And I was doing a lot of work around military sexual trauma, which I myself recovered from. When I was still really leading that effort, I'd been an American Legion vice commander and a district field service officer, which was really eye-opening. The largest hospice program on the West Coast at that time was VITAS, and they're all over the country, and they kind of helped to establish the Medicare hospice. They're kind of one of the gold standard hospices. They had like an average daily census of 600 patients at that time.
Wow. Oh, wow.
I know you can appreciate that.
Huge.
Yeah, 600 with like 14 care teams in three counties all over the Bay Area.
Wow.
They wanted to develop a new service line for veterans, end of life in particular, because we have the VA Palo Alto Healthcare System there, which is a flagship system, but they have an inpatient hospice with only 20 beds, and most of the veterans are dying at home on, you know, Medicare. So they knew about me, and they recruited me to start up the service line. And I thought, what an intriguing project.
Wow.
My husband was working with VITAS as a chaplain, so I came on as their veteran chaplain and did all kinds of community building, and then, you know, I was trained by LNIC, End-of-Life Nursing Education Consortium, became a trained the trainer in veteran end-of-life care, and in about 3 years, I had gotten our whole program to a level 4 certification with the VA for community-based end-of-life care for veterans. We were a leading partner. And that then turned into a promotion with VITAS where I became their bereavement manager, who was tasked with jumpstarting their family support program before, during, and after care, and really boosting that thing, which was pretty lagging. So I had 36 staff and working with me, and, you know, ended up redoing and boosting my certification as a grief and trauma counselor therapist. I became the lead counselor and also did a whole lot of staff support development around secondary stress, compassion fatigue, grief in the workplace, burnout. And I started support groups all over the Bay Area. We had one in every county every month going. I started an after-school program for grieving kids. I started an equine-assisted therapy program. You know, it won a national award. So from there, that was about another 3 years. And then after that, I got recruited by an up-and-coming hospice company, Suncrest, which is now in many states in the country. And they recruited me to be their director of social services and spiritual care and to kind of lay the groundwork from startup and develop it the way we know it needs to be developed to really support patients and families going through this. And I did that, and we went from an average daily census of like 60 when I came on to over 350 in a year and a half.
Wow. Yeah, that's
so
huge.
Again, and I'm almost done with the bio part here, but again, that was a combination. And in that role, I oversaw 16 social workers and chaplains, a bereavement coordinator, a volunteer manager with a core of 50 volunteers, did all the professional staff development, clinical education, which I'd done for a while. I was a certified dementia coach practitioner. I was a certified pulse trained a trainer. And then was doing direct supervision with state audits. And at the same time, because I was a mentoring leader, I had to maintain a caseload myself always, because new people coming on would shadow me, I'd mentor them, and then I'd go in the field and coach them. So after driving around the Bay Area, literally for 9 years, I just was like, I am so tired of Bay Area traffic. I can't stand this anymore. My son was graduating from high school. I looked at my husband and said, do we still have to live right here? We cast spells, we put it out there, we let it go for many lunar cycles, you know, and then lo and behold, this opportunity opened up in Santa Cruz, which was like 17 miles away over the hill on the coast, mm-hmm. with Sutter Health. And Sutter Health here in North California is one of the largest nonprofit HMOs, health mm-hmm. systems. And they had this, they were starting up a chaplaincy program throughout their entire affiliate area, which is also four counties. But they wanted a first chaplain who knew what they were doing, who would come in and lay down the groundwork here in Santa Cruz. And then so I said, oh, my gosh. And I went and applied, and two of the medical directors there knew me from the work I'd been doing, and they snatched me mm-hmm. up.
Oh, yeah.
And what's funky here was that I was able to do a lateral shift as a director into a chaplain role, which is pretty amazing. And since then, in the last year, I've served 145 different patients who are dealing with serious illness. This is not hospice now. This is it's a new delivery system that's really coming online. So, For listeners who may not be familiar with the healthcare world, palliative care.
Yeah,
it means they can't cure whatever you've got,
it's
but
a
you
bridge.
Can treat pain
it's
and symptoms.
It's a bridge from a curative point of view to hospice, and it's that space in between. It's a bridge. Yeah.
And it can be anywhere. I mean, some people live with pain and symptoms for years and years and years. I mean, Parkinson's
Absolutely.
People, ALS people, long time, you know. And
Absolutely.
Most people, I would say, a couple of years. So what I found, and I'm serving people with cancers, all your blood diseases, you know, a lot of ALS, a lot of Parkinson's, neurological diseases. But the difference is these people are, they're communicative, they're living, they're
mm-hmm.
trying to thrive, they're fighting,
mm-hmm.
you know, they
mm-hmm.
they are nowhere near hospice eligible, and they are
right.
so spiritually open and so spiritually seeking and really regard a connection to the spiritual realm as a lifeline, and they really want
mm-hmm.
to activate that, you know, for quality of life. And it's really a privilege to be invited into their life at this time and to journey with them. But it's a new context. It's not like doing inpatient hospital chaplaincy. It's not like doing hospice. It's something that's really differently in between. Yeah, so that's what I'm doing now.
Tell
anyway.
Me, I'm so excited. Tell me why you chose your workshop topic, bedside spells. What? How did that come about for you? Because it was
right.
excellent.
So,
it was really excellent.
Well, I'm glad you enjoyed it. I'd never done that before. And here's the thing. You know, when you're a chaplain in healthcare, you learn all, they call it sacerdotal function, where you're going out, you're doing sacraments, rites, rituals, you know, and everybody's taught, you know, you get a portable communion kit. You know, you can be a Eucharistic
mm-hmm.
minister. You learn how to do certain Jewish prayers if you need to. You know, there are certain liturgies that you can bring from certain faith traditions. For Pure Land Medicine Buddha, go get a Heart Sutra box, you know, and play sutras. I mean, you can do these. you've got a whole toolkit of things you're supposed to bring.
Mm-hmm.
And if you can't do it, you're supposed to call a local faith community leader who might be willing once to come out and perform a special something, you know,
mm-hmm.
for somebody. But never in any of my chaplaincy training or graduate training or cultural diversity training anywhere, except on two separate occasions, has anybody ever talked about what would be pagan sacerdotal functions. What would be
right.
resources for that? I mean, Maka once talked about a reintegration ceremony she came up with when we were doing, you know, veteran reintegration.
Mm-hmm.
And Rowan Fairchild on the Silicon Valley Interfaith Council, you know, has mentioned certain rituals she might do. But what could you possibly bring to the bedside to someone who is not connected to a pagan community
right.
or who has a vague sense of being earth-based, but they're not quite sure because they've never really articulated it or known it, and they're exploring it, they're seeking it?
Mm-hmm.
What could you possibly
bring?
And
they're sick.
So I thought,
right.
And they're sick. Right. They're sick.
Right.
They're functional, and they may be very ambulatory.
Right.
But, you know, they're living with a cocktail of medications. They're living with all kinds of limitations they didn't have before that
right.
they're adjusting to. So
right.
for whatever reason, they are not embedded in a grove or a circle or a coven, you know, of some sort with a faith leader who can do that for them. Or they're closeted,
mm-hmm.
you know,
mm-hmm.
for whatever reason. And here you are. Functioning in this interfaith, interreligious context, they don't know you from Adam. And
mm-hmm.
upon assessment, you really find out they either are strongly identified as pagan, but they don't have access to those resources anymore,
mm-hmm.
or they don't know that they don't know what to call it pagan, but they're talking
mm-hmm.
about goddess connection. They're
right.
talking about sacred feminine. They're talking about
right.
Eco-spirituality, clearly.
Right.
And you'd like them to maybe understand how it does conform to some systems that are out there that could be really helpful. So what kind of a toolkit could you possibly bring? And I thought, well, let's distill this down to what is one of the most fundamental forms of prayer, if you will, you know,
mm-hmm.
'cause that's often something that's sacerdotal, is some kind of prayer liturgy, some kind of ritual or worship at
right.
the bedside. What could be foundational pagan blah, 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 you know, that might work for someone who's of an indigenous tradition or possibly slightly
mm-hmm.
druidic or maybe kind of shamanic or maybe fairy or
right.
maybe wish, you know, or maybe ocean.
What's something in
or
common
maybe,
with all of those? Yeah.
Right. And I thought, well, you know, we cast spells. Almost every one of those
mm-hmm.
traditions sees putting energy out there with, you know, ethical ways of doing that, being very aware
mm-hmm.
of what you request and what comes back to you and how you work with energy, because it's all about energy.
Mm-hmm.
Almost all of our traditions work with lunar cycles, so whether they're waxing or waning or full moon or dark moon, you know, what is that about? So being aware of when you cast energy. How you might frame that or work with the energy of the moon and the earth and the oceans. And then, you know, how do we build upon that energy by utilizing the elements we have available to us? And then with the power of story, you'll always hear in the middle of a story, whether it's sacred story
mm-hmm.
or someone's personal story, you're going to find, and I've become, of course, a trained ear in listening for those central metaphors that really make meaning for someone. That could be a talisman. That could be a center
mm-hmm.
altarpiece. That an example of that is I had one lady I went to visit who kept saying to me over and over again as she would narrate her life, she'd always come back to this with a chuckle and say, well, I'm just a diamond in the rough. You know, I'm just a diamond
mm-hmm.
in the rough. Hello, central metaphor. And so
mm-hmm.
when I asked her, you know, what would you like as an altarpiece, she said, oh, I can't afford a diamond, but it would be so cool to see that. Well, I went online and I got like a costume jewelry piece of a diamond in the rough, a little diamond
mm-hmm.
ring, kind of roughed it up and gave it to her. She wore that thing. That was
Isn't
so
that
meaningful
fun?
To her.
Right.
Because it really expressed her sense of self. So, you know, finding that. And then I kind of borrowed from chaos magic, which not everybody uses or is familiar with, you know, the idea of not importing a pre-made sigil, but creating one yourself. And you enjoyed that, because in the process of creating it, it's focusing. It's focusing energy.
Absolutely.
Focusing intention, right? And then sort of trying to put that together in some sort of order of worship that someone may or may not choose to do, but, you know, for coming out to people who are saying, well, I'm not sure what I would do, but why don't you show me what you mean?
Mm-hmm.
Then, and I had the example of the one client who gave me permission to use her story, living mm-hmm. with metastasized thyroid cancer, which is pretty horrific for her, and her being completely estranged from any circle or groves she'd been a part of, and, you know, really needing a sense of acceptance and self-nurture and needing to find refuge and psychic space in herself, you know, in the middle of a lot of chaos. And so this particular way I put the bedside spells together came out of my work with her. And the first time I went out to her, you know, she had asked me, can you show me with some of your things what you would do? Because I'm not even sure anymore what I would do. And so I did it the first mm-hmm. time with her and then invited her to use her things the second time and started to coach her on empowering her to be self-sufficient in doing that. So anyway, yeah, that's what motivated the workshop. And hoping to start a conversation with other pagan chaplains and pagans about what are some evidence-based modalities we can find and sacerdotal functions we can come up with as an offering to the field.
I have a couple of questions, and it's interesting. So, and I found this very interesting in your workshop. So do you cast the spell for the patient?
No.
Right,
no.
Which is
what
people
go
back and which I thought was wonderful.
No, because I don't want to speak for somebody else, and I would. I personally never cast a spell or energy for someone else. I coach them on being able to do it because it's their energy mm-hmm. and their intention. I'm like in that case, I'm a coach. I'm right there as a coach for them. Mm-hmm. But it's for me the process of doing that themselves and helping them gives them a strong sense of agency. In owning mm-hmm. the intention, in feeling the outcome themselves. You know, it's important that they own it. So, yeah.
And I found it so interesting, and something that I will use in my own private practice is your creation and helping them create a bedside altar. That is very powerful. Can you, and again, it's I had the luxury of actually seeing one, but can you kind of talk through what gave you that idea and the types of things people could use in that process? Because I think that is very powerful.
Oh, well, thank you for that. And I was a little limited by what I could bring on an airplane. I mean, it's my first PSG. I didn't mm-hmm. know what the setup was, but which is slightly different than having things in the trunk of my car that, you know, I
absolutely.
But the advantage of the work that I get to do, community-based work, is I get to go into assisted livings, into skilled nursing, into residences where people live, whether they're condos or houses or apartments or mobile homes. I get to see people in their context. And so we will often draw from whatever they have in their home, in their living space. But the idea of a bedside altar is most people who, if they're chair-bound, let's say, or bed-bound, mm-hmm. they don't get up that often. They're more and more just mm-hmm. In a restricted space. That space is going to be carefully conditioned. Environment is very conducive to their well-being. So they're, you know, you don't have many. There shouldn't be a lot of clutter. Maybe there's a little nightstand or a bed table or a chair next to them. That's all the space you've got, because mm-hmm. otherwise it's a walker or a wheelchair or an oxygen unit or a TPN pole or, you know, mm-hmm. things where there's medical stuff around them. And so what you don't have the luxury of this big open area like you do in community, where
right.
we have these wonderful worship spaces or these central altars or these bonfires or, you know, mm-hmm. you can't go large. So it's like, how do you shrink it down into some sort of little portable kit mm-hmm. that would respect the directions, the elements? Some personal imagery of a deity, if there is one, or some representation of spirit for them.
and how can that be placed on a chair or on a nightstand and still create a circle, cast a circle, which, you know, I'm thinking of in just about any of the earth-based traditions we're thinking of, a circle is going to be pretty fundamental.
Right.
Directions are pretty fundamental. You know, some central image is going to be pretty fundamental, whether it's elaborate or not. So, you know, a simple altar cloth, something that'll cover the surface, something representing air, earth, fire, water, spirit, something representing.
And name those things, because I thought that was very, very interesting. For example, for air and for east, you could have a small feather.
Because you don't want, you're not going to be burning things in a skilled nursing facility.
Right.
You don't want something, I mean, a lot of people think sage or, you know, I grow my own herbs and construct my own incenses for burning ritual. I can't do that when someone might have a fragrance issue. You know, so aromatherapy is not a foregone conclusion at all. So a feather represents that. I don't like those little battery candle things. You can use those for fire.
I know, I'm not a fan either, but...
Because it's plastic.
Right.
But I liked the idea of cinnamon as an activator and a little cayenne pepper that I put in the little mother goddess image there was sort of, you know, activator herbs kind of represented fire to me. That's something I can carry in a little container, and it's not, someone's not going to be breathing that. Or pepper, you know, hot peppers or something like for fire. Water is easier. There's usually water around, little small container. But I also had a little glass globe that looks like Oceana, you know, that I can carry with me easily and put there. Like a little water marble, the blue marble, you know. Maybe that's for earth. Earth, just a beautiful stone. And I think you'll recall I had, because there's lots of these in Santa Cruz, I had a little piece of driftwood that had a shell glued to it, that had an air fern coming out of it and a space on it for things. And you can create an entire elemental altar using something like that, where you add all the things to it as a background.
Right.
On a cloth.
It was beautiful. And people necessarily wouldn't identify it as an altar, a directional altar. It was very, very clever.
Right, because lots of times in a lot of these places, like in a hospital room or in a skilled nursing room or in an assisted living room, you might have roommates. You don't know that you want everyone to know that
what your face
we're
is. Absolutely.
A circle. I do have a little ceramic image of the goddess in a pentagram with a Celtic knot woven around it that I do take with me for my Ouija patients. I have two of them I'm seeing right now. Most of the time, though, I would say of the 145 patients, about 50% are very strongly earth-based in the demographic I'm serving, which is great. And of that, I've had one person tell me, oh, I'm Norse. Two people have told me, I'm Wicca. Three have told me, I'm shamanic, one Hawaiian shamanic, two generic foundational. And and one person has told me, I like Celtic spirituality. Everybody else is generically, vaguely pagan, eco. They don't know what. They just know that's what their authentic spiritual experience is telling them is beyond the physical world, right? So this kind of a portable altar is a suggestion. But it allows people to discover for themselves what it is that should be there.
That's really, now you have, do you set up an altar and then they set up an altar? How does that, tell me how you initiate that conversation. How does that process work?
Well, as an intervention, you know, something that's going to help. I mean, there are many things we're assessing that fall under the category of existential spiritual distress. And right. one of the interventions that a sacerdotal function does is it provides therapeutic use of ritual. So you're trying to design with them. First of all, I need an agreement with them that doing some kind of ritual together feels like something that would be constructive. Mm-hmm. And ritual is so good because it gets us beyond chair therapy, and we start mm-hmm. to use creativity. You know, it appeals to someone's emotional intelligence, to their symbolic intelligence. It reinforces their intuition mm-hmm. about the mystery, and so
right. helps them find
and it's fun, and it's something different, and so it's not heavy handed like, wow, we're setting out to do that, you know?
Right.
It's like, wow, how would you feel about, I mean, it sounds like it would be refreshing, you know, I'm feeling water in this. Mm-hmm. Does water feel right to you? Oh, wow. Well, what if we did something like a little bathing ritual? You know, like we dribbled some water. Does that seem weird? No, you like that idea. So how would you imagine that coming? You know, where we start to go off down their imagination lane. Oh, you see a spring. Is this something where is there a spring near you? There's not a spring near the house. Could we create the feeling of a spring in your bedroom? Is there some way to do that? Oh, look at that. You've got that little fountain over there, that little thingy.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, would you want that in the center? Oh, that's beautiful. And what would be in the spring? Would it be your toe, your finger? It's your fingers that are hurting the most. It's your fingers that need to feel that. Okay. Okay, well, what kind of the lunar cycle are we in? We're in the waning. So maybe we want to suggest, you know, that's a time to think about what can we let go of, what can we release mm-hmm. to allow for something else to come in, you know? If you had your finger in the spring, what might you be asking the spring to let go of or wash away? And all of a sudden they're like, oh, yeah, when I've done that before, I used to go down there and I would wash it away and I'd feel so refreshed. Well, all of a sudden washing away is now becoming a metaphor.
Right.
Oh, so other times when you wash things away, what was the outcome of that? So maybe this is one of those times. So you've been here before. Mm-hmm. That's great. What would you want to invite in once you've washed away? What are we preparing for? Okay. Do you feel, you know, otters, raccoons? I mean, are there other creatures there with you who wash away? Oh, you love the otters. You love river otters. Oh, my goodness. Do you want an image of a river otter? Or, oh, they're washing the shells in Monterey Bay. Okay, well, there's a water image. So, mm-hmm. you see, it's a conversation back and forth going off of the story of what it is they're trying to achieve, what's their intention, how might you start to put together a 3D imaging of that with things they have, preferably. And then just as, you know, if you're building hermetic energy then, being aware that you're using all of the elements if possible, to add energy mm-hmm. to intention, and then you're going to have a central working at some point where you're really focusing in on that intention, and the sigil really helps to do that, and then you're going to really send that up, and then you're going to release it, and then you're going to ground that.
I like this
that
because
is about as,
you mm-hmm. guide them through the experience, but they, without realizing it, make the decisions.
And that's what gives them
Which
a chance of
very
agency.
Empowering. Yeah.
Thank you. That's the hope. And I find that I'm a theater person going way back. Mm-hmm. I understand theater and the power of story. You get people talking about their story. You guide them into understanding the meanings on a symbolic and emotional level. They start to uncover the sacred story that they're connected to. So their personal story is connected maybe to family story or a larger community story, to a sacred story. And in the case of many of our pagan patients, they don't come with a canon or a liturgy book or
right.
an archive of already established texts. We're co-creating right. it out of their authentic experience, and it's validating for them and empowering for them. But you got to do it in a portable way.
Right.
that's not going to make them sick because of the stuff you're bringing in, you know.
Right, and they're shut in or bed-bound or bound to a chair, so they're bound to a small area. And so you're right, there's not as much movement, and it has to be pretty, you know, contained.
And I'm sounding pretty energetic on this call, but it's very gentle because a lot of people I'm dealing with don't have half the energy that you and I are exhibiting right now.
Right, right.
You know, we're talking about 20-minute ritual. They're not doing a working, you know.
Right, right.
But it can still have impact.
Do you find once they experience that energy, they want you to come back, they want more? Or do they say, well, thank you very much, I'm done?
It depends. There are people, and the other chaplains in Circle Sanctuary can attest to this, I'm sure. There are those patients who just want you to do me. Please just come in and do for me. I have no energy whatsoever. Just do me. And they want you just to do the priestly function of doing it for them. And in that case, it's good to have something.
Right.
That could be generic. But there are others who love the co-creation, who are, and they're usually the clients I'm counseling with over time. So it's an ongoing relationship and conversation, and it's unfolding. And it may not be every time we see each other we're doing it, but they'll go, you know, I'm ready for another ritual. I'm ready to put this to ritual. That's exciting. It's like, good for
that
you.
Is exciting.
Let's do it.
Yeah, because that's empowerment, and that's a step toward of emotional health. I mean, that is very empowering.
Well, I'm glad you recognize that because I see that. To me, that's some of the evidence that I'm starting to see. And I don't know, maybe someone's doing a PhD or a DMin in it right now talking about evidence-based pagan tools, but I haven't seen it. So if it's there, I'm looking forward to it. And I thought, well, maybe Circle Sanctuary, with the practical wisdom of all of us who do these things, can come up with suggestions
with
for the field
study.
About this.
Yeah. Now, tell me now, because it was not my background, so, and it may not be many of our listeners. So explain real briefly what chaos magic is and what a sigil is and your process, because I found that it was new to me, and I found that very empowering. So, it was choices. You have to really think about things to choose. So tell us a little bit about that.
Well, a lot of us think of sigils as, you know, like maybe it's an Ogham letter, or some people might think of it, or maybe it's a something that comes out of a particular tradition. So, you know, you're picking from a pre-established set of symbols. I'm at a loss for words all of a sudden. I'm sorry. But chaos magic, it's difficult to define because definitions are composed of common components. I mean, chaos magic, it has no common components.
It's a tradition where sigil magic, which I wasn't aware of, came from. This particular type of sigil
magic. Right. Chaos magic, and this is perfect. It's about, you know, using whatever ideas and practices are helpful to you at the moment, even if they contradict the ideas and practices you used previously. So sigil, it's not preformed. There's a way to take someone's spoken intention, first of all, get them to put it into a bumper sticker length.
Mm-hmm.
You can create your own sigil is where I'm going. And you remember this exercise that I invited people to do, and it's the first time I'd asked people to try this. But it's like if I said my intention for this spell I'm going to cast is let me clear any barriers to financial distress. Let's just say that. Clear barriers to financial distress. So it's like, how would you put that into a bumper sticker message? You know, so someone might come up with clear money stress. Three words, clear money stress. Okay, so let's say that. So you write down clear money stress on a piece of paper, and then you go back and you look at every letter that hasn't been duplicated. And you write those letters down. And out of those letters side by side, then think of like a logo that you would develop using those letters. And once people sort of stumble around with sort of forming those letters into some graphic image, then you invite them to, you know, now you can sort of let go of them having to look exactly like the letters and go with emotionally what graphic comes out of that.
Mm-hmm.
Voila, you've created an organic sigil. That's kind of the chaos magic idea of that. Now that becomes a central expression of your intention. And if clearing the checkbook might be a metaphor that goes along mm-hmm. through the center. That's just a simple example, but that's about as complicated as that idea was.
Right, but it's interesting because, again, it's empowering. It doesn't take a lot of tools, a pen and paper, and they're able to create something that has as much meaning as they want to put into it.
Right.
So, yes, I thought it was very powerful. And talk about that.
And
we also created a chant for that.
Yeah, because when you don't have a big central working, you know how in community lots of people will come up and add to it, then you're raising a cone of power. Well, you don't get
mm-hmm.
all that, but it can still have that focused power. You know, you add whatever elemental energy you can, and then if you have a chant with it, which I like to prepare with someone before we even go into the spellcasting, you know, it's like, so what might be a four-line writing chant, you know, just going off of what tends to work, like how would you state your intention in four sort of or two rhyming couplets? So people
mm-hmm.
will come up with that with me. And then we say, well, we can sit here and we can easily add movement. You can sway. You can move your hands.
Right.
You know, I've had people bang on the table or they might, you know, beat their cup with straws or other people move their hips in their chairs if they want to. Or, you know, some people actually get up and sway. And it's like, okay, so you're adding movement, and if you feel like this is where I'm a partner, I can add my voice. We might go to some musical vocalization and have it be a chant, or it's just a stated chant. But you're doing that with the sigil, with the elemental energy, and you're raising, you know, some sort of cone of power between the two of you, and then release it.
Absolutely. Right. That's very
and
that
grounded.
Is very, very exciting.
Well,
I'm really, and it's funny, I will take some of this in my own practice. I mean, it was just, yeah, it was really how you presented it was a very unique and, again, very holistic and very empowering.
Cool.
Well,
what
have
you
learned?
I'm energized to have feedback.
Huh?
Pardon me?
What have you learned? What are some things that have surprised you? What have you learned during this process of creating this practice?
Well, you know, I'm humbled every day by this work, and I love this work. What I have learned over this 40-year expanse is that I am so deeply gratified by journeying with one person, one soul at a time, and finding how profound life is, one spiritual connection at a time. I find the sacred trust and the sacred ground that I feel I'm walking on with people is very humbling, and it's very moving and very life affirming. I'm learning that I always have to be adaptable and listen so deeply to what is coming up and out of them, and that I'm
mm-hmm.
really not, I'm not even remotely in control, because it's never about me. And
right.
that spirit is speaking so profoundly and loudly. I get to see the synchronicity of how that works. I get to see how
wow.
spirit is touching and affecting people's lives, and that never gets old.
What impact has this practice had on patients?
It's pretty new. I would say this particular technique that I developed, I've only used with two people, and
mm-hmm.
Both of them have said it was really profound for them, precisely because
mm-hmm.
they felt the agency of going through it. One woman who was a case study, who, you know, inaugurated this said she really felt a sense of acceptance and sanctuary and refuge that, and I mean, she had a psychotherapist working with her and she's seeing a psychologist and she's seeing me, and she found this therapeutic ritual so much more impactful for her. So
isn't that interesting?
It is interesting. And the other person cried. I mean, was just moved to tears and realizing how much she felt estranged from her authentic spirituality, and this made her feel community again with that in a way that felt like a homecoming for her.
Her power. Yeah. I mean, that is so powerful.
But I'm always adapting because everything's based on assessment. It's all got to come out of that person's story, that person's intention, you know, what's really going to help that person with their particular goals of care that we agree upon as a result of our assessment. And that's where a lot of the creativity of chaplaincy comes in, I think.
I do too. And as you say, pagan chaplaincy, and I am not a professionally trained chaplain, but I do pastoral care, and I do visit shut-ins. I do visit people who are in the hospital. I have worked with people who are terminally ill and have chronic illnesses. And so all these things, myself and our listeners can adapt to whatever situation. And as you say, a lot of other faiths are kind of well-known for doing this type of chaplaincy, inviting. I mean, how exciting would it be if you were admitted to the hospital and it's like, you know, would you like a priest? Would you like a rabbi? Would you like a pagan priestess? I mean, you know what I mean? I mean, how nice to eventually have those opportunities for people in their most vulnerable times.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, the Department of Veteran Affairs tends to hire chaplains by religion. Everybody else is doing interfaith, interreligious work, and we're getting all kinds of cross-cultural training all the time.
Right.
But like I say, there's never been any amount of training whatsoever, and even understanding, you know, the basics of foundational sacerdotal function for pagans.
Right.
I mean, nobody has a frame of reference for it. Yeah.
Right. And I remember, and you started off the class by saying most faiths have prepackaged chaplain toolkits, like they have rosaries, they have pamphlets, they have things that they can give to other chaplains, and we really don't, because we're relatively young and we're not that many in numbers. So it is a relatively new area. So it's Charlotte, it's really exciting work that you're doing.
Well, thank you for allowing me an opportunity to reflect upon the workshop experience and what it means, because, I really hope it's an opening conversation for all of us doing these kinds of things in Circle Sanctuary to collaborate together.
How was your first PSG?
Oh, you know, I loved it. I was so impressed. I think the moment I arrived and everybody was greeting me and I heard the heralds yell, I just giggled with glee. It was just so wonderful, but I was definitely a honeymooner. You know, I had a great time. I was super busy. I went to so many things. I met lots of wonderful people, and I was really, really impressed with the level of commitment and skill and experience there. It makes me very excited to be part of Circle Sanctuary.
Absolutely, and there are no strangers. I'm amazed because, again, I travel with a partner. I am amazed at the people who come cross-country or who come to this and don't know anybody, and they just come. And I've talked with them. I've interviewed them on the show. They have a great time. One thing I can say for Pagan Spirit Gathering, you build community very quickly there. So
indeed,
it is a really fun experience. And, again, I'm in an area that has a pretty large pagan population of many different flavors, and I'm with other pagans, but for many people, this is like the only time that they have to talk to other pagans or talk to people maybe who are pagan but not of their tradition. And so I just get so excited
talking to people, and like I said, it's usually, I'm really glad you had a good experience. Now, were you in the cabins?
I was in a bunkhouse.
Camp?
No,
did
I was
you
in a
like
bunkhouse
it?
It was.
See, those were
mean,
nice.
Was
I walked
myself.
Through and looked at one.
I
may
know,
have
I mean,
to do
Ray
that.
Not
that looked fun.
Well,
yeah.
It was okay. I mean, Ray notwithstanding, I think I'd probably enjoy having my own tent on a platform, you know,
yeah.
with my hubby there. But it's,
yeah,
there's room
that's
for
what I have to say. It is fun having somebody with you. But anyway, so I thought that was, but they looked really and spacious. It looked really, really nice. I was surprised.
Yeah, yeah. No, I know what you mean, too, about community. I've been going to Pantheacon for a long time, which is here in San Jose. It's really large, and it goes on for about 4 days. But I'm usually
yes.
there for a couple of days. Nothing like this experience of literally living for 9 days with other people, you know, around the clock.
Right.
And
absolutely.
Creating, creating a city.
Yes. Well, it's funny because and Selena does that intentional. A lot of festivals, like you say, I go to a lot of different festivals, and you can come and go. They're in a hotel. We can go to Wendy's to get something to eat. Pagan Spirit Gathering, once you're there on land, you don't leave. You're there for the whole week. And it does. It makes you feel, usually by day three, this is what it would live like if I lived in a neighborhood where everybody was pagan. And it's really fun. So,
oh, yeah.
You know,
no, that's
you don't go to your grocery store and talk about, do you start, you know, your circles in the east or the north? I mean, but you hear these conversations in class. So much fun.
Yeah, well, the hunters returning, you know, sacred hunters returning. Oh, yeah, no, that's the labyrinth fire. It's like, cool.
Yes. Yes, it is.
The
it
heralds.
Is so much
the heralds
fun.
They just make me hoot.
Yes,
hearing
it
the
is.
Herald,
it's really
yeah,
a fun time.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And I get to meet great people like you. I mean, I have met so many wonderful people who not only enriched me, but have changed my practice. I mean, these workshops are so, and again, I go to many other festivals and venues, and people have good workshops, but Circle Sanctuary's workshops are excellent, and they are at such a level. And so, like I said, it was really, really, they're really exciting. So, and I was so excited to meet you, and thank you so much for taking the time to be in on the show tonight.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Thank you for asking and for the opportunity, and great to meet you, and I look forward to many more of these wonderful learning opportunities
absolutely.
With each other.
Your passion for healing and the work you do comes across very strong. And, yes, I've got a bunch of other topics. In fact, I wrote some down as we talk tonight. So I'll be calling you. So I'm hoping you're a guest again very soon. And thank you very, very much. And I look forward to getting to know you better and as you become more active in Circle Sanctuary.
So mote it be. Thank you so much.
So mote it be. Thank you.
Have a good evening.
And besides, thank you. And besides Charlotte,
okay.
I'd like to thank David, our sound engineer, for his technical expertise. And finally, I'd like to thank all of you out there, our listeners, for your continued support of all of our shows here on Circle Sanctuary Network podcast. Our next Circle
Blessed
Talk
be
will
everyone.
Be Tuesday. Blessed be. Will be Tuesday, September 3rd. And the topic will be Duality and Paganism and Beyond with Reverend David Sassman and Reverend Kern. I look forward to being with you again, so please come back in September. We'll now transition our show with a musical selection. Good night, everybody, and blessed be.
You are a circle, you are healing me. I am a circle, I am healing you. You. United.
Thank you for joining us on the Circle Sanctuary Network podcasts, presented by Circle Sanctuary and produced for all who follow the Nature Center paths. Join us here throughout the week for various programming connecting the community around the world. And please don't forget to watch for updates on the Circle Sanctuary website at www.circlesanctuary.org. And follow us on Facebook at facebook.com/CSNpodcasts. We can also be found on your favorite podcast hosting sites, such as iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, and others. And until next time, many blessings.